From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 405, recorded live Thursday, January 2nd, 2013. This episode of Hansel Minutes is brought to you by Telerik, offering the best in developer tools and support. Online at TELERIK.com. And by Franklins.net, makers of GesturePack, a powerful gesture recording and recognition system for Microsoft Kinect for Windows developers. Details at GesturePak.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Rob Connery about the motivation for a young person to take a job or finish school.
Hi, this is Rob Connery with another episode of Connery Minutes. Today, my guest is Scott Hanselman. Yay! Hi, Scott. How are you?
You are recording, right?
Yes.
You did push record before you said that.
Yes. Did you like that? I've been practicing that intro for a while now.
Yeah, I thought that was lovely.
Okay. Well, I wanted to talk to you about a post you wrote recently about the programmer, coder, hacker, and developer walking into a bar. Computer scientist
walking into a they walked into a Venn diagram.
Yes.
And no one got my humor. It's actually an Euler diagram, which, because it's not a real Venn, a real Venn diagram has to have every combination of set intersect.
Mm-hmm.
But some of these, like, so like, right, if you look at the diagram, it's right now, it's on my blog, like Root's phone, that doesn't have a scenario where Root's phone and Talk's human intersect only.
You, sir, have been spending too much time on Hacker News.
So the point is, though, I put in two jokes and No one got any of it. First, I put in the actual Euler theory as the equation. And then I put in a thing that said that, one of the Venn diagram segments is a guy who thinks a Venn diagram was the best idea for this. And every comment was that that's not a Venn diagram. It's not actually a Venn diagram. And I was like, you guys are missing the point. No one gets my subtle humor.
No, well, it says right here in the comment at the very bottom, but it should be shockingly pink and blinking. It says, yes, it's really.
Yeah. You know, God pedant, you know, it's really very frustrating.
Hey, that's what we get when we write these posts, right?
Well, and then they were saying it was an art post about programmers, so I should have been more detail-oriented because my original post did not compile.
Well, I found this post interesting because over the holidays, I was talking to my nephew who is trying to complete a computer science degree in Colorado, and he's taking some time off, and he is bartending. And so we had a great conversation, you know, just talking about the industry and whatnot. And he says, yeah, I'm finding it really hard to leave bartending because I'm making $700 to $800 a night in tips alone.
So hang on. Let me do the math here. How many nights a week does he bartend?
I think three or four.
Okay. So four nights a week times four. That's like $100,000 a year.
You're right. And it's cash. So, you know, I mean.
$100,000 a year under the table.
Pretty much. Yeah. I mean, he declares some of it, I'm sure. But so I'm trying to talk to him about starting a career, what do you do? And he's telling me about getting in fistfights with certain people who don't want to leave. And I'm thinking, yeah, that pretty much is like life on Hacker News and Twitter once you get involved in the community. But then I read your article, which I thought was fascinating because you're trying to give advice to a friend of yours on how to get started as a coder. And you.
Well, and she's actually a doctor.
That's crazy.
Like an actual, like she's a psychiatrist and she has a practice.
Yeah. That and there's a lot of people that are making their way into the industry. You, however, instead of going the academic route, lay out Code Academy, Khan Academy, Code.org, and all these online resources.
Hmm.
I find that interesting. What are you saying anything about academics here, or are you just simply suggesting this is a way to learn code? What are you suggesting? I like the diagram, by the way.
Thank you very much. I worked very hard on that. Well, so at the beginning of the post, though, I say a lot of people in the conversation started talking about, well, you could go here and you could go there. So if you ask general people, if you just say, hey, what should I do? They will give you Codecademy. Like that's the first one. That's the one that people will give you.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, and I don't actually say it in the thing here, but I think there's got to be some formalization to it.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like if I wanted to become an electrician, I couldn't just fall into electrician. I have to become an apprentice and then I need to work my way up and there's unions to join and there's guidance and I have to learn the rules. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You can't just roll into I don't know, bootleg electricianing. Mm-hmm. I don't think you can. I'm pretty sure you can't. You know what I mean? It's just like you can't just fall into brain surgery. But for some reason, if you imply to a software engineer that they ought to think about a formal internship, the idea is like, well, you know, no, you know, well, you're insulting my intelligence. You don't think I can do it? Like, well, no, I just think that there's value in going to school. So I actually believe kind of the opposite of that. Like, if you want to goof around and hack stuff together, sure. But what I'm trying to say, and apparently I said it unsuccessfully, that a developer is a much larger, more well-rounded person than a hacker or a coder or a whatever. You know what I mean?
It's a good question. How much of a foundation do you need in order to jump in and start hacking and developing and coding and whatnot? And does the current academic climate get you ready for this? I'm a wrong one to ask. I was a geologist, right?
Well, but so I would take your sentence. You just started and you went a different direction. You said, you know, what kind of a background do you need to jump in and start hacking? Zero. You need zero. That's totally cool. But what kind of a background do you need to join a team at Goldman Sachs to work on their next level trading platform? You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I think that you need a different set of skills to do something like that. Now, I'm not necessarily saying enterprise software. I'm saying large team software. And I think that there's a difference between the kind of like it's a startup with four or five people and we're making the, you know, we're making an app versus the I'm going to go work at Aflac Insurance and make the system that runs $20 billion worth of insurance processing. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Those are very different skills. Do you think that a geologist could do that? Yes, if they have 5 or 10 years experience in software development.
Sometimes I wonder about that. When you're talking about large institutionalized development that is really rigorous, and I've been in those situations many times, you're writing things to a spec that is so clearly defined up front, usually, right? Sometimes it's a little bit more iterative these days. Mm-hmm. But given that it's so controlled, I might suggest that it's maybe even a more comfortable environment for someone to learn, you know, that doesn't know everything about computer science. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a different kind of structure. I know that we have some interns at Microsoft now on the SignalR team that are probably 20, like 19 years old or 20, you know, and they're getting a very different perspective because they're thinking about, you know, global security checks and what's called polycheck, you know, looking for, will this offend people in a foreign language if you name an API this way? And like all these kind of things that only the Oracles and the Googles and the Microsofts think about. That's very different than if they were 19 and they went to work at Facebook 5 years ago. You know what I mean?
I do. I find it an interesting thing from my perspective because I was self-taught. And I found myself in some really interesting positions over the years where I had to make up my own mind about a lot of things. And that was during the first dot-com bubble. A lot of startups mm-hmm. trying to make their way using some upstart technology, which at the time was ASP Classic, right? Whereas, you know, you work with the old guard that was at the time doing Java. And I remember giggling because I could move so much faster. But then again, I would make all the classic mistakes that they weren't making. Do you see where I'm going with this? So left alone in a startup world where I think people might think, oh, you could hack together some things and make your way. I don't know if that's the best environment for someone to come along and try and get a job. Sometimes I think a more structured environment would be the best way, regardless of your background. So do you know what I'm trying to get at here?
No.
Sorry. That was a long winding explanation. That's why I take over your show to show people how good you are at being a host. So my point being is, let's say I come out of school, I'm a geologist, and I've learned some code. I've gone to Code Academy, and I want to do something. I'm arguing that I think maybe a better place for me to go would be the large trading platform, and I can learn the rigors of day in and day out, and let's learn this, right? As opposed to some startup where they're going to throw some code at you and say, just do it. I don't have time to explain what has to happen.
Right. Yeah, okay. I mean, I appreciate that. You're basically saying that, you know, there's different layers, different kinds of structure imposed by different kinds of programming languages, different kinds of environments. If you've got, you know, 4 or 5 20-year-olds and you send one to Microsoft and one to Google and one to a startup and one to a research facility and one to a a cancer research facility versus a computer science research facility, they're going to have different levels of rigor in the code. They're going to have different levels of rigor in the development process mm-hmm. and in the corporate culture. I know that when I was doing like Goldman Sachs type work on the East Coast, even though you were a coder, you were still wearing a suit to work. You know, so you'd go in with your suit. I don't know how it is now. This is years ago, but you'd go in your suit and tie. And then you could loosen your tie once you were seen. You know what I mean? Like you could go in, be seen in your suit and tie, and then you could take off the suit and tie. But you still were in slacks and dress shoes. That's very different. Like that would I can't even think of somewhere that would happen on the West Coast. But what, you know, I've seen startups where people just come in a hoodie, and even Zuckerberg wears a hoodie still. Mm-hmm. That's company culture level of rigor. But then you've got. I've been to small startups that are doing Agile the right way, and they have extremely hardcore coding gateway. What do you call them? Not gateways, but what's it called when you you can't check something in because it doesn't meet a certain level of quality?
Mm-hmm.
I forget the word for that. I'll remember it in a second. But the idea that you know if you don't meet this level, then that code's not getting checked in. You know what I mean? And it doesn't matter what you wear. The rigor that they apply isn't societal or isn't, you know, your what you decide to put on, but your behavior. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then I know other places that don't even think about testing and stuff like that. And it's pretty much like, well, if Twitter says that our site's down, then we should probably do something about it.
I'm familiar with that. I'm very familiar with that.
Yeah, yeah. Like there are sites that have said that. Like, oh, yeah. If Twitter complains, they're the best people to tell us our site's down. Like they'll tell us before Pingdom will tell us.
So here's a small segue. You're turning 40 next week.
That is quite the segue.
You like that? Well, I'm reflecting on we have to have a get off the lawn moment whenever we do Connery Minutes, right?
That's because you're so old.
Yes, I am much older than you. I keep thinking that you might catch up, but it just doesn't seem to work out.
It's funny. Yeah, I'm actually not going to catch up, yeah. Turns out.
So... Yeah. Imagine you are talking to two developers, right? One of them, they're both very smart people, and one of them is going to get a job at GitHub, and the other one's going to go get a job at, IBM, let's just say. What would you tell them? What would be handsome and sage advice?
IBM versus where?
GitHub, let's say.
Oh, gosh.
First,
I guess I would want to know how long they would be there. You know what I mean? Like, I don't personally, and this is just my opinion, I don't personally like seeing resumes where someone has 8 to 9 months jobs, like 8 to 9 months over and over and over and over again. You know what I mean? I find that I just find it cheesy. If you've got 10 years of experience, but you've only ever been anywhere 8 months, that seems weird to me. So if I were going to go work at either of those companies, I would definitely mentally commit to myself, I'm going to be here for 2 to 4 years. You know what I mean? I'd pick a number because I could put up with anything. I could hook up for a miserable, horrible job as long as it's, you know, I don't know, as long as it's I'm learning something. But I think it would be worse to leave a job after 5 months and say, oh, yeah, I worked at IBM. Yeah, but for 5 months? I mean, seriously, is it IBM's problem or is it your problem? Does that make sense?
It does. I think the reason I asked the question is where we started the conversation before, which is what's a good place to learn, right? And I think for me, you know, I've talked to a number of developers, well, not a number, a few, let's put it that way,
mm-hmm.
whose first job was a GitHub style. And I use GitHub because it's kind of this really cool place to work, you know, and everyone loves working there, and you work there and you say, I work at GitHub, right? It's a really neat place to work. And I think that if you start off there, sometimes the rest of everything you do is going to suck. Mm. You know what I mean?
So that's like our home run show that we did on This Developer's Life.
Yeah.
Where you hit a home run, like you made Ruby on Rails.
Yeah.
And unless you make the next Ruby on Rails,
like, yeah.
What are you going to do next?
I know. What if your first job is the best job you'll ever have? I guess it's a little depressing, isn't it?
So you think the best job you could ever have would be IBM or GitHub?
No, I don't know. I was just using IBM as a structured argument. So, you know, you go to these large structured places where you sit in a cubicle, you're handed your requirements specs, and you have your code policies that you need to follow, and you just sit there and write code and drag in your designer stuff, and off you go, right? And I'm wondering, you know, the people that move around, sometimes I think this, that the people that move from job to job and develop this passion is because they come from a place where they just felt squeezed and they weren't being fulfilled. And then they have this drive that starts to build, and then they, boom, turn into, passionate developer that blogs a lot and says, this is what I found. You know, whereas people that I think are just really happy straight off from the get-go, I don't know, I wonder how passionate they could be. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I don't think that you're saying that you don't think that you could be a super passionate developer who works in an enterprise.
Oh, I'm sure you can. I'm not suggesting that. I'm just wondering if there's different levels of fire, let's say, between someone who's
based on where you work.
Yeah, if you're super satisfied with everything that's going on, and you're like, I don't need another job. This is perfect. You know. How fired up are you to go learn something new and to try something different is, I guess, what I'm saying.
Based on where you're deciding to go work.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. You know, I've heard jokes about stuff like that where I've heard people say that like we used to pick on Little Debbie snack cakes.
Little Debbie snack cakes. That's right. Yep.
Yeah. We used to talk about Little Debbie snack cakes. And then it turns out, and we used to use them as a what do you call an archetype, right? Mm-hmm. So we'd say to ourselves, but what about the guys at Little Debbie? You know what I mean?
Yep.
Because there was an implication there, a rude implication that somehow those guys were not awesome because they work at Little Debbie. But if you dig into those things, and this is my opinion again, but if you dig into the kinds of problems that they have, you say, well, gosh, they actually have some really interesting problems at Little Debbie. Mm-hmm. You know, they have some potentially interesting issues around supply chain management, around the life of the product and making sure that things get on the right trucks. I mean, you can take any problem, even in the most, you know, supposedly dull instances, and it becomes a really interesting thing. I actually did some consulting at a company that does effectively match.com for truckers, but not so truckers can meet each other, but so the trucks can meet each other. See what I'm saying? You've driven a truck from Portland to Arkansas. You also got to drive back. You have a truck of a certain size with certain size wheels, certain size bed, can hold certain size stuff. And you can say, I'm going back to Portland. And they say, hey, can you take this through Denver? And you say, boom, right? And that was just not possible. So now do that by, you know, 5 million trucks or 10 million trucks or whatever every day, and then suddenly things become a really interesting problem. So on its surface, you might say, well, that's a boring job. You know what I mean? No 20-year-old is going to go want to work for there. But at the same time, someone's going to say, gosh, that is a really interesting problem, and I want to work on interesting problems. Mm-hmm. So I don't think you can say IBM or GitHub or whatever, or Aflac or Little Debbie, and then glean someone's passion or not passion for the industry.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I'm not necessarily trying to state a position. I sometimes just am curious about it because I'm a naturally curious person. I try out everything that's brand new. And I remember I was talking to somebody who is a Microsoft developer, and I was trying to explain why I liked Rails and why I liked Ruby and why I was learning it. And they said, I just have no desire to do that. And I said, well, why is that? And they said, well, because, you know, ASP.NET and so on, it just does what I needed to do, and I'm fine with that. Mm-hmm. Which, of course, is that's great. But at the same time, I found myself thinking, is this a function? Is their lack of curiosity a function of the comfort level they have, mm-hmm. or is it just maybe they're not a explorer type? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, there is a certain amount of comfort. I remember that when, you know, if you're buying a house, you're going to think about the job that you decide to take, and you might take a safer job. But at the same time, using you as an example, I'll put you on the spot.
Sure.
You know, you quit a perfectly good job at Microsoft because there were things that you just didn't like about it. The job wasn't working for you, right? And one could argue, one could argue that was a mistake. If the goal was make as much money as possible in the shortest time as possible, you know what I mean? So you went and instead went to work for yourself. So a person who has safety first would say, gosh, quit a great corporate job that ruined your soul and, you know what I mean? And went to work for yourself. You're insane. right? You're just stupid. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, you build up your company over the last 3 years and then turn around and sell it to Pluralsight. So, you know, neener. You win. Well, you know what I mean? But yeah. Would you have known that going in? No. So you basically took a big bet and you won.
On its
surface, one could say, gosh, is that the right kind of priority? Has Rob got his priorities straight?
Well, a lot of people have questioned me on that. That's for sure. And, you know, all you can do is to say, I'm doing what I do.
You just throw $100 bills at them? Or how does
I
that
do.
Work?
Here, catch.
Connery makes it rain.
You know, the interesting thing, you're making me think by putting me on the spot, because I was sitting here. I had an idea for this application I wanted to make. So I started to prototype it. And I found myself really missing working in .NET and C#. And there's a bunch of things that it did that would make what I wanted to do really easy.
Yeah.
And I thought, I think I'll do it. I think I'll do it in .NET. I started to do it, and then it was actually too easy. And I stopped. Oh. I stopped.
Okay.
And you're gonna laugh at me, and you're probably going to tell me this is very telling. Mm-hmm. I wanted it to hurt more.
Really?
I did.
Really?
Yeah. And I realized that if I was to write code that didn't hurt a little bit, then maybe I would stop paying attention. Is that warped or what? Am I warped?
You had emotional feelings about your relationship with Microsoft as a company. So, you know, whenever anyone's moving jobs, you're going to sit there and you're going to say, well, what are the things I need to do? You know, I have to balance my personal ethics, my personal growth. I have to balance paying the rent, you know. It's one of those things. So, no, I don't think that's weird. I think you might have weighed things differently than other people.
Mm. Yeah, it was interesting. You know, I tried to explain to someone why I like Node so much too now. And it's because JavaScript is so messed up that it makes you write a zillion tests, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm afraid. And it's weird. I try to explain to somebody when I write Node stuff, I am afraid. And I said, I think that actually makes my code better.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, pain and fear. That's what motivates me as a developer.
I've talked about fear before, you know.
Yeah.
We've had these conversations. I'm totally motivated by fear. And you know, I think I talked to you about this on Connery Minutes 1 when I said I'm always thinking about, am I going to get fired?
Yep.
And I got an email from someone who was just like, you know, oh, you're Scott Hanselman, you'll never get fired, you know, and it would be, you know, you could always get a job. And it's like, well, yeah, I know I could find a job. That doesn't mean I won't find a job that I like. You know what I mean? Like, I could always manage Jack in the Box. I could be a really great fast food manager. I'm pretty confident. I could sell cars.
You could sell Little Debbie snack cakes.
So I could totally work at Little Debbie. Nothing like a diabetic.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean there's not some fear. I mean, one is, you know, fear of not growing, fear of not succeeding, fear of embarrassing oneself. Those things are motivators, not necessarily primary motivators, but still motivators.
Yeah, you know, yeah, it's interesting. I had something I was thinking about, and it's funny because I've been sitting here trying to diverge the topics enough that you lose your train of thought, and then because my mission would be completed here. Because
your goal is to
completely
control me?
Destroy the show. No, that's the whole goal of Connery Minutes is to destroy the show,
uh-huh.
And I managed to completely destroy my own train of thought. Well, actually, you know what threw me?
You do have a train of thought problem. That's probably why we canned you.
Oh.
No, I'm joking.
I know.
Come on.
No, actually, I keep thinking you're going to sit here and offer me that job again because, you know, I'm out of work.
Not after this performance? If this is the interview, no, you're not getting that job.
Oh, I'm horrible at interviews. I am the worst. So let's take it all the way back to the beginning. Let's take it all the way back to the beginning. You are looking at my nephew, right?
Oh, the bartender. The rich bartender.
Yes. He's got a choice three choices to make. One, does he finish his degree or keep making good money, right?
How far into it is he?
He's, I think, almost in his last year. So this is a big, he's got that choice. So does he finish his degree and then go off and try and find a job? Two,
yeah.
Should he just stop going to college altogether and get a job? Because he's got almost a CS degree.
And how old is he?
I think he's 22.
Okay.
Yeah. And the third choice is to quit his job and go. So yeah, quit his job and go work for like a startup like GitHub, quit his job, go to work for Microsoft, or stay a bartender. What would you tell him?
I feel very strongly about staying in school. I think I've talked about this before, that it took me 11 years to do my 4-year degree. Yeah. A lot of people don't realize that I graduated my my bachelor's in software engineering in 2003. So I've been in the industry 21 years, but I've had a degree for only 10. And I stuck with it. I went to school at night. I went to school online. I went to school anywhere that would have me. I made deals with the dean to make sure my credit didn't expire. Like, there was a lot of work because I started it. And I really believe it's important to finish what you start. I think that it's really, really sad. Like, the saddest thing for me is when you meet someone who has a PhD, but they're what they call ABD, all but dissertation.
All but dissertation, yep.
Oh, man. I mean, that's just sad.
But in our I'm going to jump in, because in our conversation with my nephew, I found myself saying for the first time, I don't even know if it matters if you finish anymore.
No, nonsense.
Kidding.
Nonsense.
But to you,
because
that makes sense.
He'll know that he didn't finish. He'll know in his heart of hearts. And if the goal is to just get money, then yeah, sure. Okay, fine. Get money. You know what I mean? Okay, whatever. Get money. But he's 22 and he's not, I don't think he's thinking about the long con. You know what I mean? And if the long con, again, this is about priorities, right? If it's about being happy and being kind of Matthew McConaughey, do that, move to Hawaii and hang out and surf. But if the goal is to acquire enough money and equity that you control your own destiny and, are not beholden to your corporate overlords, you're going to have to think about the way that you're going to manage things. Does that make sense? I mean, I guess I'm rambling. You've got me rambling.
Yes,
I'm Connery now.
Yes.
But
yes.
The point I'm making is that I don't think that he's 22. He's not really thinking about it. For me, there is a game in America, and that game is to, get enough money in into a pile somewhere that you can kind of do your own thing. Other people argue that you can do your own thing if you just don't have a net at all.
You know what I told him to do?
Oh, what? I need to call this guy.
I told him to go buy some books on Python.
Okay.
Learn it. Stay a bartender. Get a job at a startup. That's what I told him.
But why wouldn't he just finish? You said he's right at the end. I mean, it's not like he's a freshman.
I think it's because, it costs a lot of money to keep going through school.
He's almost done.
He's burned up. He's taking time off.
Is he taking time off because he's an entitled?
No. He is one of the nicest kids.
No, I mean, I don't know the guy from Adam. I'm just saying, is he like, I'm burned out. I need to find myself.
No, I think he goes through what you and I went through, right? You delayed your degree. I delayed mine. And
I delayed my degree because, for other reasons, but okay.
Okay. Well, either way. All right. I delayed it because I was wandering around and I just thought, I'm going to go travel the earth.
You were trying to find yourself, right?
Oh,
exactly.
Yeah. You're just trying to grow up.
I didn't know I was lost.
Yeah. And now you're found.
I suppose.
Anyway, so I told him, go buy Python books and learn it. And
why Python? It's pretty accessible and flexible language.
I was worried about rotting his brain.
Rotting his brain with other languages?
Pretty much. I'm not saying Python's perfect, but if you compare the complaints that you see that people have, right, between Python and Ruby and JavaScript and blah, 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 Python to me seemed to be something that was reasonable. I'm not saying it's perfect, but how's that for a statement? I'm going to get email about that.
I think
go ahead.
Python's a good language. It works on, it works on a Raspberry Pi. You can talk to hardware with it as easily as you can write a web server. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a nice, it's a wrist friendly language, and it teaches kids about, what's the word? It teaches kids about significant white space, which I think everyone should learn about early.
Yeah, formatting's built into it, so your eye gets attuned to it. I think it's nice. It's a nice language for learning. I love C Sharp, but it's like I've told you this before.
There's too much emotional baggage.
What?
As a first language to go and learn C Sharp.
Oh,
if there was
for me.
No, not emotional. You have lots of emotional baggage. I'm talking about C Sharp. The problem with C Sharp, I think, right now, and with most languages, is that separating the language from the libraries. You know what I mean? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, I always talk about this when I talk about Node, right? Like, there's JavaScript, which is half of Node, and then there's the Node base class libraries. And the funny thing about them is that there aren't any. You know, you just have to go and put them together. You have to go and say, oh, I need something to help me format dates, like, you know, I got to go and find moment.js or this and that.js. And you end up with 60 different libraries. You know what I mean? While with a .NET framework, there's this base class library which comes with it, and you just have to learn that. You know what I'm saying?
I do. There are,
and that's a lot. And the problem is that you can put all of your knowledge into your you waste all these brain cells with information about frameworks when you really need to be thinking about the language constructs.
Well, there are five or six core modules that are Node.
You know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying, but just in case people out there are going to be confused, I had to be pedantic for a second. Sorry, it's my Hacker News moment.
Yeah. So, you know, you know what I'm saying, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I like languages that have a lot of different choices for the underlying framework.
Absolutely, I would have suggested C#, because I am coming around to love this language. It is so capable, and I would have suggested it. But then you start thinking about link, and you start thinking about, oh, how many different ways do you have to represent a collection versus a list or an array? You know, mm-hmm. It's just a lot of stuff in there. And so I felt like, well, it's a good step two language. You know, once you're done with Python and you're thinking, okay, now I want to build, you know, littledebbiesnackcakes.com. Well, maybe we could use C#.
Yeah, but the problem that I have with that suggestion that you gave him is that it doesn't deal with the underlying issue of, like, he's obviously staying in bartending for the money.
Mm-hmm.
And he obviously doesn't feel that he wants to finish his degree, or he would just finish his degree. So there's some root issues there that aren't being dealt with.
That's, you know, I think this is more than a personal issue, and this is why. I just read Quicksilver, Neal Stephenson. Have you read that?
Uh-huh.
And there's a line in it where one of the main characters is talking about why he founded MIT. Mm-hmm. And he said, I wanted to show, and I'm going to butcher this, I don't know the exact quote, but I wanted to show, or wanted to educate people with real science instead of all that other philosophical nincompoopery.
Nincompoopery?
Nincompoopery. I loved it. It was such a good word. And I was thinking, that really is sort of the problem with college these days. Some of the thinking and some of the teaching and some of the things you face are just really, do they apply in this world today? You know, yeah. You find classes that people take that are just trying to get credits to get through, uh-huh. which really, you're trying to expand your brain and understand more about the world, but it's become this system that you're trying to hack and get yourself through, and then you dump a couple hundred grand along the way, depending on where you go to school. You know what I mean?
Hmm.
I guess I'm a little bit jaded on it all. You know?
Yeah, I think that the whole third, I do have to agree, and we should probably end on that, though, the idea of 30 grand a year so that you can owe a lot of money is a problem. You know what I mean? Yeah. I do think, though, that with software, you can get a degree and pay off the degree more reliably, more quickly than if you got a degree in, I don't know, social work or something. You know, it's almost like the more noble the degree, the less likely you are to be able to pay it off.
That's true. Well, yeah. as I told my nephew, he could go get a job at a startup, see what it feels like, make some money, and leave, and maybe he'll be really fired up to go finish his degree later on. I don't know.
Yeah. I think the other final question is that does this nephew of yours like building?
Mm.
You know what I mean? That's really what it comes down to. If he likes building, then let him build. But obviously he doesn't like building as much as he likes making $700 a day.
Yep. Well, Scott, thank you for letting me come on your show and utterly destroy it. I hope people are finding just how good of a host you are.
it's lovely. It's content-free every time you're on.
Exactly. This has been another episode of Connery Minutes. Thank you so much for listening.